On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're searching for the President's Killer in Manhunt on Apple TV+. Back on the Wagon with Roisin Gallagher in ITVX's The Dry. And yes, watching Love Rat on Channel 5. But don't fret, because Anthony Mackie joins us on this week's show talking about video game adaptation Twisted Metal, which comes to Paramount Plus next week. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that promises that we will not be spending 10 minutes banging on about the precise placement of subtitles on this week's show. However, we will be delivering the entire broadcast entirely in Portuguese, which you'll be hearing in English. So that's nice. And to facilitate this, I am joined, as you would hope, by my two co-pilots, Boyd Hilton and Kay Ribeiro, or Senor Boyd and Senorita Kay.
Very good.
There is actually, on Shogun, there is a Portuguese dub. So if you want it to be authentic, you can actually switch the dub to Portuguese, should you require
switch
that level of reality.
The dub.
Yeah, so that the audio is Portuguese. There is a Portuguese dub of Shogun.
I bet you've done that.
I have not. But I'm saying, you know, Kay, I know you found it very upsetting that they were speaking Portuguese, but you were hearing English, but you can change it so you are hearing Portuguese.
I thought you promised not to talk about any of this.
I have not mentioned subtitles. Okay. Purely the dub. I'm getting in on technicality.
I feel like this hell will never end.
It won't. No. It will never end. Great. So let's talk about what we've been watching, and I'm going to begin with one thing, and then an apology. I'm going to issue an apology.
But before we get
unprecedented apology. Before we get to the apology, I'm going to say that I have watched The Walking Dead: Daryl Dixon.
Oh.
I got the Blu-ray and I watched
Blu-ray.
It. Yeah, it's available on Blu-ray. You can't stream it yet, but you can get it in physical media.
On US Blu-ray, you mean?
Yeah, because they're region free. And I watched it. Do you know what? I really liked it. Like, it's better than Dead City. It's Trey Francais, and I quite like that. And they've got, and there's warrior nuns in it, which is fun. Clemence Posey is a warrior nun. And there's a new type of zombie, which has got like weird acid-y touch, like a burning one. I think they're called burners. Mm. It's original. But no, it's genuinely fun. And it's him like trekking across France. It has a really distinct flavor, being very French. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun. There's a weird messianic subplot about this boy who may or may not be some kind of messiah. It's a little bit odd, but yeah, I was digging it. I very much enjoyed it. And like Daryl himself is a great character. And as has been reported widely, Carol will be joining him for season two. So yeah, bit of Walking Dead action. Will we ever get to see it over here? Who knows?
So how many episodes did you watch?
It's six. It's a very short series.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the last one, so The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live.
Yeah.
That I haven't seen. That's airing in the States at the moment.
Is that the one with Andrew Lincoln?
That's the one with Andrew Lincoln.
That's the one,
yes. And Danai Gurira.
To be fair.
But I don't know when we'll get that.
I'm all about Lincoln.
Yeah.
So why are you looking at your watch already?
Because I'm getting notifications. I'm not bored.
We've got way more on this to cover.
I'm instantly bored. No, yeah. I'm getting news alerts.
Oh, okay.
Jimmy Kimmel, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Jimmy Kimmel what?
Jimmy Kimmel reveals Oscars hosting plans, talks late night future. There you go.
Big Oscars night.
That's what interrupted the podcast. So that's the first thing. I watched that. The second thing that I wish to say is I wish to offer an official apology to anyone who might have considered being put off Three Body Problem by my constant references to it as being hard sci-fi. So I finally got around to watching Three Body Problem.
Wait a minute. Come on.
I'm not going to review it.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to review it. I'm not going to give any kind of critical opinion. It's embargoed, so I'm not going to say that. I'm simply going to say I misrepresented this show because the books are notoriously dense,
yes,
and very physics-y, and the phrase hard sci-fi has been applied to them. I have heard it applied. I don't know if it's accurate because I've not read the books, but I have watched the show.
I heard it mainly from you.
And, yeah, it's true. I'm here to tell you it's actually really accessible. And it's not hard sci-fi at all.
I told you that.
You were right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I apologise.
The main thing, person you're apologising to is me.
I apologise to you, but I apologise to you.
And you said he's right.
Yes. And to Benioff Weiss.
How many episodes have you watched?
I've only watched the first two.
Okay.
I'm getting through them. But I won't tell you what I think of it because it's embargoed. But I will say there is a mystery.
Yep.
And while there is a sci-fi element to it, it's quite grounded. And I found it very accessible. And actually, I do feel this could have some crossover appeal.
Do you think I'll like it?
I think you might. Genuinely.
Yeah, it's possible.
I do not think you'll hate it.
I will say this, without breaking the embargo or anything, episode 3 that I watched last night is a wild.
Okay.
Yeah,
looking forward to it. Yeah. Looking forward to
Jeez.
It. Yeah. So interesting that we're going to be reviewing that very soon. Mm. Is it next week? Might be next week.
But I'm not sure what the embargo was. Yeah, I don't.
Oh well, we might end up doing it on Pilot, on Plus.
We'll see.
I don't know when it's embargoed. We'll have to check.
To be Plus.
Okay, but yeah, lots to talk about there, and no spoilers here. But there literally is, because we're going to be doing a Three Body Problems spoiler special.
Oh, you are, yeah.
Because
brand new information for the two of you.
And the reason I say that is because our very own Helen O'Hara, who has read all of the books and has been on set of the show, she is speaking to the showrunners.
Oh wow.
Very shortly, in about half an hour, for a spoiler interview. Oh, okay. And then we will convene. Boydie, you are officially invited.
I've made it to the
Three Body Problem spoiler special.
Boyd, you've been invited to your own podcast.
Yeah.
I kind of want three of us to do it, so there's three bodies in the room and we have a problem.
Helen, and Boydo.
Yeah, so that's what we'll get together and we'll have a big old nerdy chat. Maybe next week. I think we should do it next week, so see if you can binge them all on the weekend.
Okay.
This is exciting times.
Okay. You know, it's Mother's Day on Sunday. Just reminding you.
It's Three Body Problem Day on Sunday.
Get your mum round. A bit of Three Body Problem.
Yeah.
A bit of high-end astrophysics.
Yeah, but I can say, okay, it's officially not hard sci-fi, it's absolutely fine.
It's very
There's quite a lot of physics, I will say. Quite a lot of physics.
So far in this pod, James has apologised to Boyd. Mm. He said Boyd is right, and he's invited him to the special. Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, do we stop now? I think we just stop.
I don't know what's happening. No. I really don't.
I think this tour that he's on has addled his brain.
It is. So I should say, as we record this, and people who listen to the Empire podcast will be aware of this, we got back from Norwich like 2 hours ago. I am absolutely destroyed. And I slept my way pretty much through the Empire podcast. I was just in a doze all the way through it. I barely slept last night. Premier in pillows. I'm not in a good way. The Norwich premiere as well, I believe. I stayed at the Norwich premiere. I looked for a travel tavern. There wasn't one there.
I mean, I would have just done a whole, like, Insta, whatever it's called, you know, video, reel, that's it, of my time in a Norwich hotel like that. Oh my God.
I missed the trick, didn't I?
Yeah.
Even bigger mystery, we did a thing on stage where Chris played the first few bars of the Bond theme tunes and we had to guess which one they were.
Brilliant.
We were in Norwich. Did he do Goldfinger? Did he fuck? And I'm just like, what are you? Why? Why would you not do Goldfinger? So we could have gone, pretty girl.
What a twat.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Can you imagine, like, do you think the people who work behind the, you know, behind the desk at the Travel Tavern equivalent, like have Alan Partridge style people coming down with their
course.
Big plates?
Yeah, without a doubt.
And you know, when he dressed up on Halloween in the as a zombie with like the railing from the shower fitting.
I think they probably also get some American tourists coming in looking for Alan.
God, yeah, I bet, yeah. You could have been Alan.
I could have been Alan. I mean, in many ways, I was quite Partridge, so yeah.
Fantastic.
Good time. I had a good time in Norwich. Yeah. It was good. Quite a pleasant
beautiful
place.
City. Beautiful
had a stroll
city.
Around.
Town or city? Town.
City. Well, no, there's a Norwich cathedral. City. And I know why, because Helen took us round the cathedral.
Oh, I know, it's because it's Norwich City Football Club.
Yes, we saw that too. Yeah. We walked round the cathedral, and what else did we do? We went and we had lunch in the picture house there, which is the only medieval cinema in the country.
Good fact.
Because it's a former church.
That's good.
So, in conclusion, the tour is going well.
The tour is going. It's definitely going.
No, I've heard good things on Twitter. Everyone's saying it's a lot.
I hope they are enjoying themselves.
The only thing that they're all complaining about, there's no Pilot TV representation.
Yes. Well, yes, quite.
That is accurate. Though I do name drop Pilot TV regularly. So
good.
I think you're fine.
But more importantly, did you bring us back any M&Ms?
There's a whole box of them. I don't know where they are, but yes, there are a lot of M&Ms. Okay. There were a lot of M&Ms.
I need them in my mouth immediately, please.
Our tour sponsor, M&Ms, have been very generous with the chocolate, so that's nice.
Great.
But what have you guys been watching?
I had like one of my busiest days yesterday of screenings, so I'll just talk you through it, basically.
It's ridiculous how much
First thing in the morning, Blue Light Series 2.
Wow.
This is the Northern Irish set, Belfast mostly set drama that was a massive word of mouth phenomenon a couple of years ago. This is Series 2. I hosted the Q&A with the cast and the creators, embargoed, but yeah, very good. Then I went to see The Regime.
Oh, yes.
Two episodes they screened of that, Sky and Now.
Is that Kate Winslet?
This is the HBO Kate Winslet drama in which she plays the dictator of a fictional Eastern European country. And Matthias Schoenaerts, is that how you pronounce his name?
I think, more or less.
Is this like she kind of employs, she picks him out to kind of run key aspects of her life I won't say any more on that without spoiling it, but that was fascinating. And then I went from that to Avoidance, screening of second series of Ramesh Ranganathan's sitcom for BBC One that we probably didn't review because of
you. Doesn't ring a bell. Yeah. Because of me. Yeah, it's my fault.
But I had a really good time there, and Ramesh accidentally spilt like a kind of bit of vegan food on me when I said hello to him at the end. And
I bet you didn't tell him off like you would with us about getting on your Supreme jumper.
No, I laughed. We laughed together about the slapstick nature. Slapstick nature.
Oh my God, your fake laugh. We're so happy.
Of the whole thing. And so that was three screenings in one day, basically, which I don't think I've ever done before, three TV screenings in one day.
Three screen boys.
And they're all coming soon. So, yeah, they'll all be on in a few weeks' time. It's going to be a bit, I think, pre-Easter. I think we're in the build-up to Easter. And, yeah, there'll be exciting new stuff. I went to the theatre. I went to the National Theatre.
Did you?
After that, yeah.
What is it?
The three-hour play. I watched a three-hour play about Nye Bevan, which I'm reviewing tonight, Thursday, on BBC Radio 4, people. You see? Upmarket.
Yeah.
As Boyd's physician, I was worried about how much he was cramming in yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. When I sat down in the National Theatre, I was like literally, and you know, kind of exhausted. And I thought I would be in danger of falling asleep, especially because such a long play. Mm. But luckily, it was spoiler alert, fun enough for me to.
What a testament to the play!
Yeah,
it kept Boyd up.
Yeah, Michael Sheen, my friend Michael Sheen from you know. The
we know who he is.
The Way,
right.
The TV show, The Way, yes. That we liked.
You don't need to tell us who Michael Sheen is. We're fine.
I know, but I remind you that I hosted that.
Your close personal friend, Michael Sheen,
and
yes.
He's now my close personal friend.
Yeah,
and that we really like The Way. Although a lot of people don't like The Way, I discovered
this is not The Way.
Yeah, a lot of people. It's
really.
I was one of those people.
Explain to me. So, yes, that's right. We said because of the tonal,
yes, you remember?
The tonal tightrope that it walks is quite specific.
It is, and a lot of people thought it was ridiculous and pretentious was a word.
Kay's nodding vigorously. Yeah,
I
love Michael Sheen.
I will stand up for it. Yeah, but this play is about Nye Bevan. Do you know who Nye Bevan is?
I don't know.
Really? Do you know Nye Bevan? No. That's interesting because I was taught history at school. I was taught about him at school. He's basically was the creator of the NHS. He was made.
I did not know that.
Minister of Health under the Clement Attlee 1945 post-war government. Remember, there was a Labour landslide and Winston Churchill was defeated massively. It was a really, really interesting time, political time. And Nye Bevan was this like left-wing firebrand, famous for standing up for the unions. His dad was a miner. And he was given the job of creating the NHS, which he did in an extraordinarily short amount of time.
Wow.
And the dramatisation of this is fascinating. You can imagine, like, they were doctors didn't want to be part of it, so they had to convince the doctors to agree to treat patients without being paid. And, you know, it was a whole negotiation. They had to build hospitals. There weren't enough hospitals. It was an absolute revolution. So, it was fascinating.
Sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it was a play. And I won't be surprised. I bet it'll make it to TV eventually. Mm. It's such an interesting story. Yeah. There we go. That is literally what I've been watching, Kay.
You've had a full week.
Yeah. Full day. That was in one day.
A full day.
Don't underestimate how much he's crammed in.
A very full day.
Just one day for Boyd. So I have been watching, and I'm going to talk about it very briefly, Celebrity Brother. I watched the launch night, James.
This is Celebrity Big Brother that we were going to do on Violet Plus and then didn't.
Yes, you overruled the...
I did.
You overruled Democracy.
I did overrule Democracy.
But I've only watched the launch night and haven't watched any more. And I had to Google most of the people going in. The bulk of the money has been spent on Sharon Osbourne and Louis Walsh going in. And on launch night, that money paid off because Louis was completely, bewildered at everything that was going on. He just went up, he got introduced, the presenters like introduced him to the crowd. He already revealed that he already knew Sharon was going in, so like unmasking any kind of like any veil of like, you know, the idea that there's some kind of secrecy involved. Nope, Sharon told him. He didn't know where he was going. It's like he didn't know what show he was on. Like he looked completely confused. But anyway, he went in, and Sharon and him together reunited was very entertaining. I think since then it's kind of like the wheels have come off a bit, but I watched launch night because wanted to see who was going in. And then the other thing that's taken up my time, I've only watched one other thing, is The Great Pottery Throwdown. Yes.
You are nothing
this
if not on
core,
brand.
James.
Yeah.
Listen, it was the semi... Right, so when we're recording, it's the semi-finals has been on.
Mm.
And I'm not going to spoil it for the one other person who listens to this who watched it. But I was devastated.
Did you pick up any tips? Have you learned how to make a proper handle on a mug? You know, things like that.
Oh, good memory.
Yeah, good memory. I picked up loads of tips. It's great. It's a good show, but I'm really disappointed by the result of the semi-finals.
Whenever you talk about
went out.
Pottery Throwdown, I can't help but thinking of Boat Story and the hitman who has like a fetish for pottery. which is just extraordinary.
Yes, it's
an utterly bizarre but brilliant subplot in Boat Story, where there's this hitman, all he really wants to do is just work clay, and he, at one point he wants to pursue his dream of becoming a potter. It's wild.
I think you should take it up. When you're doing pottery, you can't think about anything else. You can't worry about anything else.
Really?
Yeah. What, that, James?
Doesn't 100... feel like it uses a lot of higher brain functions.
Listen, when you're doing it, you can't think about anything else. You're just having to be at one with the clay. You just have to concentrate on it. You can't think of like, oh, this happened at work. That everything goes out of your mind. It's really good for anyone who's like got very chaotic or busy mind or is anxious. Yeah. I'm going to take you. Oh, listen, we're going to go throwing.
All right. I'm in.
Are you going to be the...
I'd love to see you at a wheel, Boyd. Both a driving wheel and a pottery wheel.
Is he the Patrick Swayze to your...
Oh, wow. Yeah. We'll put on the Righteous Brothers.
Yeah. Demi Moore.
That's only if we get 1 million reviews on...
Yeah. Or alternately, the Leslie Nielsen to Priscilla Presley.
Just get covered in clay.
Yeah, more like it.
Much more like that. Second Naked Gun, third Naked Gun.
One of them. Yeah. One of them. Yeah. Okay, I'd well, like I'm going to organise...
Maybe a special treat for Al.
A group trip. Yeah. I'm going to organise a group trip.
No, the recreation of that video.
Oh, right, okay. Fine.
I don't think anyone wants
to. So is this what happens? Like, if we get like however many reviews, we get cake. Bajillion. And then if we get like five more, we go to like a pottery place.
Let's go throw some shit. It'll be fun. I think it'll be
throw
fun.
Some and then shit. Let's not do that.
Yeah.
We're
some
not monkeys.
Oh my God, can I just side note?
Yeah.
I once had a, like, you know, when you can adopt a, someone
I'm excited
adopt,
about this.
What's
no, a monkey. Someone adopted me a monkey from Monkey World in, I think it's Devon or whatever.
It is, I've been there.
And
Dorset, so, actually, isn't it?
Is it Dorset?
I think it's Dorset.
And I had a monkey called Eddie. And Eddie was.
Eddie the monkey.
Yeah. This is already gold.
Eddie was a poo eating monkey. I went to visit Eddie, and Eddie
was. Is that an official breed of monkey?
Yeah, yeah. Eddie would grab, he was a chimpanzee, would grab.
Then it's not a monkey, it's an ape.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, whatever. It was like, you know.
Get your primates right.
Fine. I was there to witness it.
His own stuff.
I mean, would it be better if it was someone else's?
Well, dogs do that a lot, don't they? That's the thing. They are
coprophagous.
Anyway, all I know is Eddie, I don't know whose poo it was, Eddie smeared it on the wall and was just licking off. Yeah, I know.
Dirty protest.
Oh, the podcast has taken an unfortunate turn.
I was both disgusted but then also proud.
And is that where you got it from? Because look, when we had to do foundation, like I came in and I'm not, you know, not giving too much weight. Kay was smearing feces all over the walls of the pod booth. Never again, you know, foundation. No, like it was
bad. I've said it before and I'll say it again. James is full of shit. But no, yeah. So that's my one experience of monkeys and poo. Yeah. So anyway, carry on with TV.
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah. This has been a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what we've been watching, I think. Let us have a listener question. Kay, back to you. Speaking of potentially throwing shit at the walls, what have we got?
Okay, this message comes from McWurtz. For All Mankind Series 1, Episode 1 is so slow burn, it's fucking nigh on impossible to get a newbie to commit when there's so much other stuff on that smacks you in the eyeball straight away.
Accurate.
Yeah. What's a favourite slow burn show that your partner / bestie / doggo / landlady will never see?
Oh, I mean, there are. I mean, obviously, we've talked about Constellation quite a lot, but that's a proper good slow burn show. And For All Mankind very much is that. And that first episode in particular of the first season, I mean, is quite the hurdle to get
past.
I think it's
the first few episodes.
Yeah.
I think they're all...
Do you know what? It's not common for great shows to have this. So Breaking Bad, another one. Better Call Saul. I mean, Better Call Saul. The first season of Better Call Saul is a slog.
Yeah.
In many ways, the second one is as well. But it gets really, really good as it goes along. And you know, Breaking Bad, the first season it's good, but some of those episodes are not in a hurry to do anything. Leftovers, some people struggle with as well because it's not a fast moving show. None of us finished Station 11, so that was so slow burn that it burned out.
Yeah, there's almost like a common theme to this. There's a certain type of show which is it's almost like part of its DNA is to take its time to introduce a setting and a group of characters. They're often like a big ensemble, like Leftovers, a big ensemble. Mm. Cuts between lots of different characters, establishing their storylines quite steadily, deliberately pays, to use that phrase. And I think For All Mankind is similar, huge cast.
Yep.
I do. Yeah, I agree with James. All of those. Yeah.
Do you think in this day and age there's a place for it though?
100%.
Yeah, oh, yeah. 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 I think it's very difficult for these shows to punch through. And I think part of it is because these are shows that entice you. They entice you to come to them. They don't jump out at you. Mm-hmm. And it's what David Simon in The Wire used to call lean forward television watching, where he wasn't going to spoon feed his audience. He was like, no, you lean forward. I want you to work to get the information. And if you watch, in particular, the first season of The Wire, the first time you watch it, for the first couple of episodes, you genuinely don't know what any of the characters are saying, because they speak in sort of street slang and there's no effort made to explain it.
We watched it, didn't we? We did a thing on Pilot Plus.
Yeah. Did we do it on Pilot Plus?
Yeah.
No recollection of that.
Points. Oh my gosh. Yeah, you literally made me
watch it. I'm just repeating myself.
They're very good points. No, but do you know what I think though? I think the traditional, what you might call terrestrial channels are more, they have reacted to this more. I think they're much more averse to a slow burn.
Mm.
Than the streamers.
Why?
Because I think they feel under pressure, because there's so much more content now. There's so much, particularly in the scripted world. And I had this bit of a discussion about this at the Blue Light screening with someone, because Blue Light Series 2 begins with a huge, big, very explosive scene. And do you remember Line of Duty always begins mm-hmm. with a big, explosive scene? And, I've seen at least two or three other big new dramas coming up recently, which have big, big opening scenes. And I think I think they're all a bit getting a bit like het up and a bit defensive.
Yeah, yeah.
And
trigger point,
exactly. Whereas I think the streamers, because they've got so much of this stuff, they're a bit more relaxed about, you know, people easing their way in, particularly Apple TV. Well, actually,
Apple, yes, but you do say that. But then it is that classic thing, and if you find this with a lot of films that debut on streaming, that the structure of those films are fundamentally different because they debut on screening.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Directors have talked about this, where there is a point where you've got maybe 30 seconds from the film being that you've got to grab people's attention, lest they just stop because there's so much.
Yeah, that's true.
So they try and, this is why we so often get that device that's, you know, 6 months earlier, because they try and front load something really exciting. I mean, it's not a new thing. TV shows have been doing that for years. Stop you changing the channel. But it feels in the streaming age with so much selection, they do try and do something grabby quite early on.
I think it depends how powerful you are, though.
Yeah.
I think the streamers like to get, like, you know, Martin Scorsese and blah, blah, blah on board, and they give them fucking carte blanche.
Yeah, do what you want.
Do what they want. Whereas if you're, I don't know, yeah, the person who's making Constellation, even, you probably have, I don't know, you know, but or no, more Netflix shows. If you're making a kind of smaller scale, but more fun Netflix show, then it's going to be fast paced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a whole Netflix interesting conversation for us to have when we review Three Body Problem.
Yes.
About how they've approached that particular story.
Yes.
What's your threshold? How many episodes will you give something to kick in before you think no?
Ooh. Do you know what? It depends on the type of show. So I think something like Constellation, the reason why I persisted with that to the point where it got brilliant was because it was 100% my bag, right? Like, that was totally a show that I thought I should love.
Mm.
So I was willing to put in the effort to find the gold there, because it was something I really felt resonated with me. Had it been something very different that maybe wasn't in my wheelhouse, but could have been amazing, like a comedy, I wouldn't have persevered with it, because I'd have been like, oh, it's probably not for me anyway, or I'm just not that bothered.
Mm.
Whereas I really wanted to like this. And so I broke through the barrier and was like, yes, this is brilliant. I feel vindication.
Yeah.
Maybe it is, you need that kind of, you need to want it.
My answer to this question, by the way, and I've said it before, is Schitt's Creek.
Oh, yeah,
because you've got pressed through a whole season of that.
Not
you?
A full season, I don't think.
More or less, though.
But it is a lot of episodes. It's not a full season, but it is too many.
And that's one that I've just, like, people are like, oh, no, you must. I'm like, I'm never, ever going to do that. Ever. Because it's not a show that really appeals to me. I'm sure it gets great. I'm never watching a whole season 2. Oh, no, they said just start with season 2. I can't do that. I'm sorry. that's just not going to happen. No.
My other one is there was The Sandman. Remember The Sandman?
Oh.
I found that really difficult.
Yes.
And quite tedious, frankly.
Did you watch the rest of it in the end?
I got really into it. I watched the whole thing. Yeah.
And did you recant?
Yeah, I recanted.
I'd forgotten.
Yeah, I totally.
Okay. Sanjeev Bhaskar, I'll put you back in a Christmas card list.
Recanted. Yeah, recanted. I still, the big episode in the diner, which everyone's banging on about. I don't think this is as amazing as everyone
That's
else,
not my
it?
Favourite one. My favourite one is the Shakespearean one.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What that episode did do is crystallise what the whole show's about for me.
Yeah.
So from then on, I think I was more on board with it. Yeah. But I pretty much recanted, I think.
Did you watch the two specials? Including
the
cat one?
Yeah, we did. Okay. Yeah. It was an animated one.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I did. Yeah.
Good.
Was it recommissioned eventually?
I believe so.
Yeah. They took their time, didn't they?
Yeah.
It's
an interesting one because I had to think about this and we kind of, I'm skipping ahead to news here a little bit, but just because while we're talking about Netflix, obviously Avatar, which we did not enjoy, has been renewed not just for season two, but for season three as well.
Yeah.
But when they announced it among the cast, they said, you know, the way they did it, like they almost like trolled them, like we got some news and everyone just assumed they'd been cancelled because obviously it being Netflix and it being kind of a YA show, I think they all just assumed they were going to get cancelled. And to get renewed for not one, but two seasons, which is wild because I didn't like the show, is this Netflix deliberately trying to say, hey guys, we're not the cancellation club, we promise?
I don't know, I think they'll have data, won't they? There's a lot of
Avatar heads.
Avatar heads,
there are. It's massive.
Yeah, so I think it's a purely...
it's a purely algorithmic decision.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, fine. But yes, this is a good question. I like this question. Mm. It's good. Slow burny stuff. Schitt's Creek is a good shout though. That is one of those slow burny
It's not
ones.
So much a slow burn Schitt's Creek. It just
starts shit and then gets creek.
No, it doesn't. I think it is slow burn.
It's entertaining
from the beginning.
Like barely even half hour sitcom episodes, really. It's not boring or anything.
No, not at all. I think it takes a while for you to really get to grips with the characters to kick it for, you know, the good stuff.
But then is that the same thing? So like someone like Parks and Rec, when we've talked about this before, is a show that wasn't great, then became great. And Schitt's Creek is often one that's described in the same breath, where it starts off, it's fine, and then it gets really good.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether this question is more about shows which, from the beginning, like they're designed to just take a while for the penny to drop, for you to crest the hill. So it's not like the quality improves, it's that it just takes a while for you to get to that point where it all falls into place.
Okay, well we'll do an extension of this question, a part B on the next episode. We'll tackle that one too.
Okay. Fine. Well, that was the postbag. If you would like to write to us either for this or for Pilot Plus, please do so at Kay Ribeiro on the Twitters or at Pilot TV Pod on Twitter or Instagram.
Oh, yes. And to the person who very kindly pointed out that my DMs were not open on Twitter, I've now done so.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Wow. That's dangerous. fantastic. And also, leave us a review. Now.
Oh, yes.
Yes. That's right, yes. Let's have a guess, because this week we have Anthony Mackie on the show, the MCU's former Falcon and now Captain America. But this week he's a milkman. Not your average calcium courier, however, but rather a post-apocalyptic transporter in the world of Twisted Metal, which is based on the vehicular combat game and a show that lands on Paramount Plus next week, as I mentioned. We sent a Mon Warman down to get metal with Mackie.
We'd like to be joined on the Pilot TV podcast by the star and executive producer of Twisted Metal, Mr. Anthony Mackie. How are you, sir?
Hey, how's it going? Good afternoon, morning, evening.
Yes, afternoon in the UK, which is where I'm at. I am really enjoying the show. So first and foremost, congratulations. I was just explaining the show to a person earlier today, and it's a really interesting mix of these heavy themes like class warfare and racism and police brutality. Yeah. And then it's got this completely insane, profane Mad Max energy to it with gory kills and car chases and the like. Was there any one particular element of the show that most had you wanting to be involved?
Well, I grew up with the video game. I was never good at it, but I grew up playing the game. So I was just turned on and intrigued by the idea, you know, because the game never really had a storyline. It was just like a bunch of people driving around trying to blow each other up. So
right.
I was just excited by the idea of taking it from the game and actually giving it a plot and story and characters.
And your character, John Doe, I've heard that it's been tailored to you. So for want of a better word, what were your favorite Mackie-isms? Was there a line reading or a mannerism that is very purely you?
No, there were a bunch of things. I mean, every episode there was, you know, a bunch of stuff that I wanted to put in that I thought was funny that made him more of a quirky, more unique character. I would say the diner scene, the galaxy diner scene, was a lot of me and my shenanigans coming to life.
One thing that I did take notice of in the show, I'm not sure if you had anything to do with this, but a black man needs his cocoa butter. So I like the fact that the show actually took the time to say that and put it in. Was that you? Was that an open
mirror? Well, no, the worst thing in the world is being ashy. And I don't care if it's the apocalypse. I don't care if I'm on another planet. I will have my moisturizer. I'm not walking around with ashy elbows anywhere.
Absolutely. 1,000% agree. So as we mentioned, this show is tailored, this character rather is tailored to you. It was close to you in some ways. which of the roles that you've played is the furthest away from who you are?
I would say randomly, I did this, man, that's a hard question. That's a good question. I would say I did this movie, so I don't do drugs at all. I'm deathly afraid of drugs. If I ever see drugs, I freak out and I run out of the room. So I did this movie called 10 Year, and I had to smoke weed in the movie, and or marijuana. I don't know what's the appropriate way to term it nowadays. But I had to roll a joint in the movie, and it's literally been the highlight of the worst acting I've ever done in my career, trying to roll a joint and look like I smoke weed.
You're not going to have to search this movie out now.
Yeah, I'm literally like, I have no idea how, like, I have to be the first person in history to have a three-finger hold on a joint. Like, I have no idea how to hold it. It's a disaster. And the more they tried to show me, the worse I got at it.
No weed smoking in this, so definitely don't have to search about the skill in this, at least. One of my favorite things about this show is you and Stephanie Beatrice together. You guys are so great together. And you've been doing this for a while now. I'm sure you've had plenty of chemistry reads with plenty of actors. Mm. How quickly do you know when it's going to work or not work when you meet an actor that you may end up working with? And was your chemistry with Stephanie instant, or was that something you had to build on?
Well, I have a very like simple sense of humor. I love to laugh. I love to make fun. I love to make fun of each other. And I love to dish it, and I love to, you know, receive it. And I know from the first moment, if you're an actor or an actress that takes themselves too seriously, we're not going to get along. And it's going to be a long process. And fortunately, from Stephanie and I first meeting over Zoom and the first interaction we had, it was just fun. It was easy. She's such a sweet and open vessel to just play and just experience the space with. So we had a great time with no limitations and no like BS to get in the way of it.
I love that. And I imagine you guys had many alternate takes to play with, because just thinking about that scene where you're in the cinema doing different voices, I'm imagining there was so much fun you have just with that. Was there any particular ad-lib or improvisation that you loved that didn't make it in?
There was one. I don't remember the exact line, but I remember we were like basically walking down the hallway to be thrown off, or when we got tased next to the car. And I told her to stay in the car. She gets out of the car, and it abruptly ends in us being tased and us laying on the ground. And she was laying there with, and it was hot, and the rocks were hot, and it was just a hot day. And she looks at me, and we're laying there tied up, and she goes, "This fucking sucks." And it was just one of those moments where like reality and art like just smashed perfectly, because we were both, everybody was thinking it, and she was like, "This fucking sucks." I'm like, "Yeah, yes it does, thanks."
See, it is within your power as executive producer to put a blooper reel online. I'm just saying.
We have bloops for days. The best part was watching her try to learn how to drive. I've never seen, just in real life, her in this little car trying to drive was pretty magical. It was very humbling on many different levels.
I love this. Again, blooper reel, I'm there. I'll be searching. I'll be watching. It'll be fantastic. This show is set in 2002. Did that trigger any memories of living through that time for you?
Oh, yeah. 2002 was all about music. I mean, I was fresh out of college. I was in New York. So everything, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s was all about music, who I was listening to, and where music had come from and where it was going at that time. And we had a lot of conversations on set about music. Our director, Kitao, he and I would go back and forth with songs. We would just text each other songs. I never had like a music platform, and I paid for iTunes. just so I could get music and send him music while we were shooting this show. So it was a big investment on my part. And it was a good time because he was listening to some different weird shit.
I love that. The needle drops in this show are great. When I saw that John Doe, he whipped out his case logic with all the CD sleeves, that just took me back immediately.
Well, the best part about it is during the show, I was like cleaning up around the house and I found my two case logic stacks of CDs. Like there used to be this service called BMG, right? And you can send in a penny and they would send you like nine CDs. But there was no way of accrediting or checking if it was you. So I would literally just send in 100 of these damn things and I got all these CDs. And so I had boxes and boxes and cases of CDs from, so shout out to BMG. I probably owe y'all about $150,000 in CDs, but I only paid 20 cents in pennies.
I love that. I love that. You figured out a way to game the system. I love it.
I single-handedly put them out of business.
One of my favorite needle drops in the show is Barbie Girl, which is used as a method of torture. That's a sentence I never thought I'd ever say, but it happened. Is there any particular song which would be absolutely hell for you to listen to over and over again?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say anything Taylor Swift, or just anything in that, like anything like bop. Or like you watch those commercials where it's like, you know, wow, 19, and it's all the songs like from that period on those CDs. That would make me jump out of a window.
Oh man, that's so interesting because the editor of this podcast is a massive Swiftie.
Of course, as a 45-year-old black man, I don't get it.
I listen to some Taylor Swift, not all Taylor Swift. Believe me, when it comes to Empire, the guy who I'm talking about, James Dyer, is the biggest Swiftie. He'll be that guy. He has been that guy when the concert tickets made available. He will, you know, screw the work day. He will be the guy. I need to be in the queue.
And it's like, it's either you're all in or you have no idea what it is. It's really a thing. I don't have too much in common with 16-year-old girls. So I'm more of a old school hip hop, R&B, funk, soul kind of dude.
Having now walked a mile or two in John Doe's shoes, do you think you're prepared for the apocalypse?
I'm so ready for the apocalypse. But my thing is, I'm not going to be one of the people, like, post-apocalyptic life sucks. So if I look out this window now and the apocalypse is coming, I'm going outside and letting them kill me first. I don't want to be invested or involved in trying to find food or, like, make shit work. No, when the media is coming, I want to find out where the media is going to hit, and I'm going to stay in right there.
Fair play. Fair play. My follow-up to that was that of the actors you've worked with, who do you think would be the best at handling the apocalypse, and who do you think would be the absolute worst? Who would you worry for in the apocalypse?
You know what? I've had this conversation several... Chris Pratt is ready for it. Pratt is ready for, I don't know what the apocalypse will be. It might be raining fish. I don't know what it is, but he's ready for it. And I would say who would die first would probably be, let's see. This is where you like, I've worked too much. Because there's a lot of people who would go first. Because there's so many of them, so many people. I can see.
I think Stephanie would do quite well.
No, she would definitely go first. If not first, she would definitely go second. She would be going. She would be going early. Like if the zombie apocalypse comes, she would be going early. Yeah, that's a hard one. I can't. That's a hard one.
That's all good. So this is a film. This is a film. This is a TV show that is based on a video game. Mm-hmm. If you could flip that and turn one of your projects into a video game, which one would it be? And who would you most like to play as?
Well, remember they had the video game of the It was like you played the guitar. It was like rock, rock guitar something. It was like rock Nate, rock something. And you get to play the guitar along to the music, right? Yeah. I've always
wanted... Guitar Hero?
The what? Guitar Hero, yes.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do a hip-hop version of Guitar Hero. And you can battle against, pick your favorite rap song, and you can battle against somebody rapping a song.
This is magic. Look, that's whoever is listening, somebody get on this show right now. This is magic.
If we can make 8 Mile into like hip hop heroes, and you get to pick your song and go at it, and the your score is how the audience, so it's like karaoke, but with hip hop heroes.
Magic has just happened in this room. The next time I talk to you, I want to be talking to you for the junket for hip hop heroes. That's fantastic. I love this idea. But we're going to have to leave it there. Cut the check on this interview. We're done. Anthony Mackie, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot, man. Good to see you.
That was Anthony Mackie. Time now for this week's news. Who would like to take on a story while I desperately look to see if there's actual news?
I will talk about the fact that there is a new documentary from Apple TV.
I know what this is.
On the 29th of March, called Steve Martin, brackets, a documentary in two pieces.
Now,
and this one apparently was specifically made just for James.
Well, no, the question is this a two-part documentary or is this a pair of documentary films? And I feel it is very crucial that we identify this.
It's a two-part documentary, which we'll fully be able to review on
Yes!
I mean, don't feel that we have to. Like, no. I think we can definitely say it's two films.
And if we get offered Steve Martin, by the way, for this podcast, we're fucking
Shall I do it?
And I'm doing it.
Okay, let's just take a vote. Who wants to review it on the pod? Yeah, Boyd and I, hands are up. So, Boyd, let's do it.
Good grief.
Motion passed. Okay, so yeah, anyway, the documentary is coming out on the 29th of March. It dives into his extraordinary story from two distinct points of view. The documentaries will feature never-before-seen footage and raw insights into his personal and professional trials and triumphs. The Then will chronicle his early struggles and meteoric rise to revolutionise stand-up before walking away at the age of 35. I never knew that. And then Now focuses on the present day with him in his golden years of his career. So I'm excited to watch that.
I am not.
Something you're probably more interested in than hopefully is that the official trailer for Ripley landed. We know that it's going to be launching on Netflix on April the 4th with Andrew Scott in the role as Tom Ripley. And it's exciting. I'm very excited about that.
You just reminded me, I asked for screeners of that and they haven't got back to me.
I am shocked and appalled. They gave them to me weeks ago.
Yeah.
Just text Andrew.
Webs. They issued casting details for the new, very exciting, new Lena Dunham vehicle that she's done for Netflix. Because let's face it, we've been waiting since Girls. Really, she did film. She's done a couple of films, hasn't she, in that time? But as a proper kind of TV comedy show, this is the big one that she's created. It's called Too Much. And it's previously been revealed. It stars Megan Stalter and Will Sharp, the great Will Sharp. And it's about how she is a New York workaholic in her mid-30s, reeling from a broken relationship, slowly isolating everyone she knows. And she's in New York, but she decides to go to London to take a job. And she falls for this guy, Felix, who's described as a walking series of red flags. Which is a good phrase. So it's kind of like, seems like it's rom-com. It's got the producers of Love Actually, making
it. It's kind
it
of mirroring
actually.
Her life, by
yeah,
the sounds of it.
Yeah, because she's married to a Brit. So along with those two, we've got Adele Exarchopoulos from Mass Passages in it, Adewoa Aboa from Top Boy, Andrew Rannells, who was in Girls, of course, you recognise him, Emily Ratajkowski from Gone Girl, who's brilliant in Gone Girl, the comedian Leo Reich, who's very popular.
I never watched this series, it's Netflix. I think it's on Sky.
Rhea Perlman from Cheers. Isn't it? Brilliantly exciting.
Carla.
Richard E. Grant, isn't it? Rita Wilson, Stephen Fry, star studded.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
There you go. I'm excited.
Yeah. Do you know what else is coming?
What?
Well, not only are Lionsgate doing another John Wick series. This is obviously in addition to The Continental, which we have seen. And obviously there's also Len Wiseman's got a film, The Ballerina, which is coming out at some point. But there is another John Wick series in development. But Lionsgate, when they announced that, with the same breath, said that they are going to be doing a new Twilight TV series. Mm. And it's going to be animated. Oh, an animated Twilight TV series.
We'll get the hate mail again.
Hey, hate I didn't tweets. Scoff. You haven't heard me scoff. No, all my Boydo. Scoffing was internal.
No, scoff. Boydo I just said, oh, God. Could be interpreted in lots of different ways.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to interject, the Leo Reich stand-up special was on Sky Comedy.
There you go, see? Mm. I said Sky.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Do you? I mean, I've never watched Young Sheldon. And actually, I think I did watch the first episode, but the main reason I don't watch it is because Big Bang Theory is slightly hateful. But there is a spin-off of the spin-off. So there is a Young Sheldon spin-off that has now been ordered by CBS.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to do with this information, but yeah.
He's a machine. What's his name? Who produces those shows?
Oh, yes. Yeah, your man, Chuck Lorre.
Chuck Lorre. Oh, my God. He is prolific. Right, it's, you know, just and then they make dozens and dozens of episodes in old school network TV style.
Exhausting,
shows. Yeah. Bloody hell!
Is anyone here a fan of Tim Allen?
I have no objection to him.
Okay, well, you may be mildly excited to hear that he's returning to ABC. He's going to be starring in Shifting Gears, a multi-camera comedy pilot for the Disney-backed
Disney. Network. I love the Disney.
Yeah. It's called Shifting Gears, as I said, and it's going to revolve around Matt, played by Tim, a stubborn widowed owner of a classic car restoration shop. When Matt's estranged daughter and her teenage kids move into his house, the real restoration begins.
I was not a fan of Home Improvement, I have to say.
Weren't you?
No. You?
No, I can't say that I was.
I was kind of indifferent.
I didn't like it.
Okay, well, so that bodes well for Shifting Gears.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely thrilled.
Zero fucks given from Boyd then. Sorry, Kay.
Yeah. You'll be excited about this. Okay. You know the new Rebus? There's a new Rebus series coming.
I did see that, yes, the BBC.
Yeah. Mm. Interestingly, this has been made by a Scandi streaming company, right? And the BBC have acquired this from them. It's quite weird. So instead of doing it themselves and rebooting, which is quite an obvious thing to do because it's been years since Rebus was on the BBC and it was a really good show, a really good superior crime drama. This has gone all the way to being made by the Viaplay is the streaming service. And the BBC have acquired it from them. I mean, fine, fair enough. It stars Richard Rankin of Outlander fame in the title role, adapted by Gregory Burke, who wrote 71, 64, and various other things. Still set in Edinburgh. They haven't moved it to Norway or whatever. So, thankfully. So, yeah, it's fascinating. Lucy Shorthouse, Brian Ferguson. But, yeah, I'm that was a really good... Ian Rankin is a brilliant writer, is the bottom line, and I'm sure he would make sure that they've done a good job.
Good.
Yeah.
Did you watch any of the trailers that dropped this week? I'm thinking specifically of A Gentleman in Moscow, Hugh McGregor, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, that looks a lot of fun. And also Fallout had a new trailer.
Oh, yeah.
No, Fallout is my jam, can be said. It's you know how, what was the one where Billy Crudup was trying to sell apartments on the moon? Remember that one?
Yes.
Yeah. Nothing like that, but it's got the similar sort of retro future aesthetic.
Oh, no, my worst.
Which I know you love.
No.
So Fallout famously is like a 60s vision of the future.
Like that film as well with, what's the name? What's his name?
Oh, that one.
Oh, that one.
No, I don't know what you mean.
Kill Me Now. Kill Me.
Seriously, Kill Me Now. Yeah. I don't want to watch it.
You know, with One Direction, dude.
Oh, Harry Styles.
And, you know, that was a retro suit.
Let me look it up.
I don't know what this is. Yeah.
Yeah, you do. You do.
Do I?
It was a massive film. And it's called Don't Worry, Darling.
Oh, that one. Yes, of course I've seen that. Yes. I mean, that's not, I mean, I suppose it is. That's more of a... I mean, do you
don't
know what?
Spoil it.
I know what you're trying to say.
It's seemingly set in that kind of
you're right. You're right. But even then, the retro future is only going kind of mildly retro future, whereas this is obviously proper future.
But it's based on the video game that
it's based on, which I've spent many, many hundreds of hours playing. Yes.
You know what just happened there?
What?
James said you're right again.
Did I?
To you?
Did he? Are you sure?
That's the second time.
I don't think I did.
You did. You said you're right.
Did I?
I don't think he did.
You did. Anyone listening will know.
It seems doubtful, though, doesn't it?
Something's going on with James today.
Something is amiss.
It's the lack of sleep.
It is the lack of sleep. I think it's the Norwich in me. is that it for news? Have we got more?
Oh, I was just going to make a point about Fallout. They were talking on another podcast about like pop culture and stuff that I listened to.
No other podcasts exist.
I know. About how, why is it that video games, which is a industry that I think it doesn't make as much money as TV, but I think it makes more than movies.
It does.
Right? And how it's not taken seriously as a culture of cultural import and you don't get the same level of analysis and reviews. And the host of the, and the, review went on about how, you know, like there's no big critics, name critics, unlike with film reviews, going back to Pauline Kael and stuff. And I'm like, it's not to do with that at all. It's basically because to play a video game, you have to acquire a certain skill set. It's quite, for me, like what holds me back from playing video games particularly, A, is the time consuming nature.
Sure.
Hours and hours and hours, right, playing this stuff, which would... You know, if you're already watching loads of TV, add films, add that together is a huge commitment. But it's the skill with the controller and the thing and all of that. That's what puts a lot of people off video games. Is whereas film and TV, you just sit there watching it. It's a different experience, right? And that point was not made on this podcast. I thought it was fucking ridiculous. So I'm making it
well,
now.
Well, I think, but I suppose you're coming at video games from the position of someone who doesn't play them. Like, whereas if you've been playing video games since you were a kid, then there's no real barrier.
But what we're talking about is why isn't criticism of video games like an art form the same as TV critics or film critics? And I think that's partly why, because it's not instantly accessible to everyone, that form. Whereas all the other books, anyone can open a book and read it. You can watch it. There's an extra element involved with video games. And I think that is true. That's my theory. Anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, to not acknowledge that difference is weird.
But it's funny.
There's no Pauline Kael for game reviews. I'm like, well, it's not.
I'd never really thought about it in that way, actually, that there might be a barrier to entry. Because again, as someone who grew up with video games, it's just like breathing to me. It doesn't even cross my mind. Yeah. But also, a lot of games assume a knowledge of previous releases.
Oh, yeah.
Like they'll assume that you have played X, Y, and Z, and therefore this will be really easy.
But like,
were you
tempted to play video games? Like,
no.
But why not, though?
Oh, I had a Game Boy.
But why not? Why aren't you tempted by it?
What, just now, for example?
Just in general.
I can barely get my Sky to work, so all those cables.
It's a challenge, isn't it?
It's not easy.
Do you get what I'm talking about? No, it's different to watching a TV show or a film.
Yes, because I just have to click on my remote to watch TV thing.
Exactly.
And all this. I'd have
but
to.
That's key.
Yeah,
it's key. For
yeah,
me.
Of course.
I'll stop banging on about it.
In an age where everything has to be easy, it's not easy.
Yeah, it's a challenge. Honestly, yeah. Anyway.
Okay, I guess that's the end of news. Let's move on now to this week's reviews. And first up, we have The Dry on ITVX, Nancy Harris's show about a woman on the wagon having returned to live with her family in Dublin, where the Empire podcast will be next week as part of our ongoing tour. So book your tickets now.
Is that in The Dry? Is that mentioned?
Yes, they do. They do plug the Empire podcast tour where we're going to Dublin. Yes. Have you booked your tickets to the Empire podcast in Dublin?
Oh, my God.
Have you done it? Grand. Key, you're a big fan of The Dry. What did you think?
Listen. Let this not be a thing for the rest of the pod. What did I think of it? I really, really like this show. So for me, it was like a gem of 2022, which I don't know if it went under the radar, but...
we reviewed it on the show.
Yeah.
We loved it.
That is true. But I didn't hear, like, my actual friends. No one I knew was really talking about it. I don't know why, but...
Maybe get new friends.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's my next job on my things to do list. Anyway, as you said, Roisin Gallagher from The Lovers, another show that I loved, plays Shiv Sheridan. She's gone back in the first series. She goes back home for a funeral. She's a recovering alcoholic. The family dynamics and the tragedy they've experienced and the simmering tension, all of that is constantly like threatening her sobriety. But she stays there. Loads of things happen. And the series finale is brilliant because it's just like it all comes to a head. I won't spoil it for you, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really strong finale. And now in season two, it's 7 months on and Shiv is, she's still sober. She is back on the wagon and she's trying to resist the charms of the local barista because she's worried that, you know, it will cause her to drink, because often when she's like dating people, as we saw in series one, it leads to that. Her feckless brother, Ant, played by Adam John Richardson, is remarkably still in a relationship. And her sister, who is single after the events of the season one, she's now shagging everything in sight. This is brilliant because it's not just about like a character that is a recovering alcoholic. It's much more than that. It's about family dynamics and how they are. It's their shared history. It's how they're really bad communicators. They don't talk about their issues or a big tragedy that has befallen the family. They never discuss it really, or, you know, and there's resentments there. And I just think it's such a great study in it. And the characters, all of them are so well developed. And the actors, particularly of note, are Pom Boyd and Kieran Hines. What?
Pom who?
Pom Boyd.
Oh, look at you. Trying to get any glory.
Yeah. Like, no, what? This is an important thing. Like,
do you know why? I thought it was because I notoriously am bad at pronouncing names, and I thought I'd done it.
No, Boyd always flags when there's a Boyd.
Yeah,
whenever we cover a Boyd.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Yes.
And Kieran Hines, who play the parents. So yeah, it's just a great cast. It's fantastic writing, and it's just like, it's just so good to have these characters back. I want to watch it, like, you know.
Forever. Boyd, have you ever considered starting a club just for Boyds?
I love that that's your reaction to what I've said.
Yeah.
I have.
You could call yourselves Bad Boyds for Life.
No. But funnily enough, at the theatre last night, the guy who sat next to me is like a journalist of some kind, and he confused me. There's another Boyd who used to work for Screen International. This sounds quite a lot. That there's weirdly another Boyd who writes about TV and film, as well as the actual Boyd Hilton as well, who writes, who's
the historian.
Historian, yeah, at Cambridge. But no, maybe I will start.
If you started a Boyd club, would you allow Billy Boyd to be in it?
Yeah, I think first name is, or second name
is
fine.
Okay, good. Anyway, back to Kay. So The Dry, yes, I agree with you. I think it's very good. Although I will confess, I was slightly lost because I didn't watch the whole of the first series. So I wasn't entirely sure what was happening. But I still liked it. It's still just as charming as it was the first time.
Yeah, I don't think it's...
Well, no, because stuff's happened with the characters, right?
Yeah,
that stuff has happened and I was unaware of what had happened. Yeah. So I was trying to play catch up with it.
Mm. But did you still enjoy it?
I did enjoy it, yeah. Yeah, I did enjoy it.
What about you, Boydo?
Oh, absolutely. It's just a really good show. It's all in the writing, isn't it, for me? It's Nancy Harris who writes the whole thing. And she's just come up with a brilliant ensemble. The family is so eccentric and yet believable, which I think is a really difficult trick to pull off. And they're all doing stuff that is like what's the word I'm looking for? Non-routine. You know, they're all shagging, they're all having, you know, prolific sex, no matter how old they are. They're kind of trying to deal with their addictions. It's basically like the kind of taking, this might be regarded, if you didn't know these people, this family, as just like a bunch of normal, likable people, but it's all what's going on within their lives. The festering weirdness going on underneath, I think, is so funny. And it's one of those things that is a comedy, really.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but...
It's darkly funny, isn't it?
It's darkly funny, but also it is the holy grail of funny, but everything is arising from those characters being funny and the conception of them all. Every single one of them is good. Like the brother, that was really funny. Mm-hmm. And even the new love interest of the guy in the coffee shop, the barista, who's in he's in that the Irish drama, by the way, as well.
What Irish drama?
You know the Irish drama that's been off that we reviewed
Kin.
A couple of weeks ago? Kin, yeah. He's in that. Yeah, he's in Kin. Yeah, if you recognise him, yeah. Check him out.
Oh.
If I could remember his name, that'd be great, but I haven't got it to hand.
Your man!
Yeah, your man in Kin. Your man in Kin.
Yeah. Boyd, do not be don't be influenced corrupted by James.
Yeah. I finished watching Kin. I never said that. Sometimes I forget that I watch stuff in the what you're watching. It's great. It's really
Can
good.
I ask you a question, right? Because I really liked the first episode of the second series and I'd never watched the first series and I was tempted to go back, but I haven't because you know, hello.
Yeah.
Did you watch the first series or have you just watched the second entirety?
I watched it. I mean,
you're a monster.
Yeah, he thinks I'm a monster, so I'm reluctant to admit it. But I know I tailed off for the first series and watched the first few, but then I watched the first one, second, which we reviewed.
We did.
Yeah,
yes.
And then I carried on watching
monster.
It live on live TV on BBC. Yeah. It was on last night, in fact, the last two episodes, 10:40. And
maybe
I just
I'll do the
it.
Same. I'm loath to do it, but maybe
I know
I will.
It's against the rules and James hates me for it, but it worked for me and it's really good. Yeah,
I really liked the first episode.
But this, so back to the try though, really so brilliantly cast. Every single cast member is just absolutely inhabits their character.
I should say that Caroline, this is because I noted I've said all the names, but I haven't said Caroline. The sister is played by Siobhan Cullen.
Yeah, the sister has great stuff to do now. I think if there was one character that's slightly underwritten, maybe in the first series, it might be her, but she's really more to the fore, at least in the first episode. Maybe that's being slightly harsh. It's great. It's just a really good show.
Nancy Harris has, you know, knocked it out
absolute
of the park.
Absolute triumph. By the way, series one is on. It's all on ITVX. But I was about to say I was getting confused with Extraordinary, which is on Disney Plus.
Yes,
The Dry is just on ITVX, and series two starts on Thursday, and I think it drops all in one go.
Oh, brilliant!
Yeah. Thursday,
that's genuinely exciting
of March.
For me.
Binge watch The Dry.
Yes.
Thursday, the 14th of March.
Someone commended us for repeating the dates more.
Yes,
Thursday, so let's
the
keep
14th
that up.
Of March.
Which year?
2024.
Oh, good God.
Thank you.
Year of our Lord.
Next this week, we have Manhunt on Apple TV+. This is Monica Bielecki's series adapting James L. Swanson's book, Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's killer, which, you'll be shocked to hear, is about a 12-day chase hunting the killer of one Abraham Lincoln, who, if you don't know your history, was murdered by John Wilkes Booth. Boydie, I know you'd be up for a 12-day episode of The Chase, but were you, in fact, up for this?
Oh, I bloody would. That would be great.
Look his eyes light up.
Historical version of The Chase with like great people from history. Yeah, going back to, I don't know, the 19th century. Anyway, this is a weird one, isn't it? Because it's like a, it's obviously a true story. Abraham Lincoln, as we all know, was killed by
a real guy.
A real guy. John, real president, killed by real actor John Wilkes Booth. And he really did go on the run for 12 days, broke his leg in the process, was kind of enabled by the people, a group of people who kind of shared his, basically, let's face it,
Confederate sympathizers,
quasi-fascist Confederate views, pro-slavery, because this was, so the context is at this time was that Lincoln had signed the proclamation to get rid of slavery, but it was still lingering, and, you know, a lot of people in the Confederacy refused to accept, they'd lost the fucking Civil War. I mean, all of this has, by the way, you know, echoes of what's happening as we speak, as President Trump is going to get re-elected in a few months' time.
God, what a downer, boys. Come on.
But the weird thing about
keep it light.
Way to send the podcast out with a bang.
Yeah, sorry. But what Monica Bielecki has done, and by the way, she's been obsessed with this thing I was reading up on it, for years and years and years. This is her passion project. She's fascinated by this story. And she's taken what was a non-fiction book about it and turned it into this thing through the lens, almost like a true crime drama kind of thing. So it's kind of, that's her vision of it. And this project goes back to like 2002. Harrison Ford was going to star in it. Did you know that, James?
I didn't know that.
Fact.
No.
Then, and this is even more interesting for you, in 2008, there was a David Simon version of it planned.
Was there?
Yes. Yes, for HBO. That fell by the wayside as well. And then all these years later, Monica, who worked on The Leftovers, by the way, got Apple involved and they agreed to make it. And it's, I thought it was fascinating. I think Hamish Linklater plays President Lincoln in heavy makeup. And I was like, oh yeah, there's Hamish Linklater there in there somewhere, who's in that Mike Flanagan series we loved. What's it called?
Which one are we talking about?
Mike Flanagan.
The Haunting of Hill House, the one with the vampires, which is called Midnight Mass.
Midnight Mass, that's the one, yeah, I particularly remember him in. Tobias Menzies is this guy, Edward Stanton, who was the Secretary of War, Lincoln's right-hand man, and he takes it upon himself to kind of track down John Wilkes Booth, who's played by Anthony Boyle, by the way. Anthony Boyle's having a great time for Apple because he's in Masters of the Air, and I saw he's cast in another Apple TV Plus production coming up. I think it's a really interesting story, and it is incredible that John Wilkes Booth somehow went on the run and was not apprehended for that long. But I'm not sure if I need, I felt after watching this one episode, I thought, I'm not sure if I need any more absolutely meticulous detail to tell this story. I get the gist. And eventually he's captured, right? Kate's laughing. It's beautifully made. I mean, this, you know, as I say every single week, we talk about how brilliantly shot every Apple TV Plus, and it's true. And this is another one, beautifully shot, epic kind of recreation of the period. It reminds you, there's flashbacks to various key moments in recent past that Lincoln involving dealing with slavery, etc., and his political allies and political enemies. So it does the job it's setting out to do very well, meticulously, but as something slightly unexciting, I have to say, about carrying on watching it another, I think, quite a few episodes to come, maybe 7 episodes in all. Slightly mixed feelings about it is what I would say.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is very well produced. Everything about this, you know, is good. I would say that from the start.
However, but it's a bit boring.
It's a slog, right? I found this a slog. And as James says, it's a bit boring, primarily because it's not a moment in history that I'm particularly interested in or have an emotional connection to. It's over, which is under 160 years ago. I feel like if it was about, not that, you know, that's not the reason why I'm not connected to it, obviously, but it's just like, it's, you know, if it was JFK's assassination, maybe I'd be like more invested in it, but I just wasn't interested in it.
Oh.
So
I mean, I am interested in that period, but I think I was probably slightly bored as well. Yeah. Or certainly not engaged enough to carry on watching it.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem, isn't it? Like, it's like you want to like it. And it is, as with all these shows, sumptuously shot, looks beautiful, clearly spent a lot of money on it. And as you say, it's a passion project. She really knows her stuff. But it's just, I struggle to care. Mm-hmm. I also think
you're saying in that weird way. I struggle to care. I don't know why you're using that voice.
No, but I'm with him. I also struggle to care.
Is it a slightly apologetic way?
I'm sorry, but I was bored. Also, and there's a thing that whenever Abraham Lincoln appears in anything, it's a parody. There's no way around it. There is no way around
Daniel
it.
Daniel Day-Lewis was a parody.
It can feel that way because he's a parodic figure, like, you know, with the beard and everything. It's just the hat.
He's got a signature look.
Yeah, 100%. It's like
he works the one look well.
The beard without moustache.
Yeah, it's not a good look. Weird, the chin strap, as I believe the kids call it.
The chin strap, yeah.
Not a good look.
No.
The Honest Abe. Don't do it.
No.
It was fine, but I wasn't sure if I was supposed to be like, am I rooting for Tobias Menzies? Do I want them to catch the killer? Do I want the killer to get away? Do I just not care either way?
We don't want the killer to get away.
No, I didn't really, I don't really care what happens. Also, mm-hmm. I'm pretty certain I know that looks at watch, in 12 days he's going to get caught. So it's in the title.
What is incredible that they didn't do, and I was surprised about this, is because you get the gist completely in this first episode, and you know, as you say, and you know that he is going to be captured, they don't give you any reason to carry on watching it at the end of the first episode. Like, none. Like, you'd have to be really invested in the detail of this story and borderline obsessed with Abraham Lincoln and or John Wilkes Booth and the whole thing to want to go. And I was thinking, it's not that hard. They could have done. Mm-hmm. I was surprised by it. The end of just kind of like, it's like, just give me more reason to carry on.
A Lincoln obsessive like you isn't wanting to carry on,
compared to you, I mean, you didn't give a shit about anything pre-1945, apparently. Pre-Pulp Fiction, as they say about the kids. but I was surprised about that. Definitely mistakes have been made.
Mistakes were made.
If I was in charge.
Right.
I'd have been like, come on, give us something
Apple,
else.
Apple, offer him a job, please.
That's right. Please hire Boyd as your head of programming. But until that time, Manhunt appears on Apple TV Plus from
Friday. The 15th of March, 2024.
You can hunt it down then. It'll take you 12 days to find it. Finally, we have the main event. It's the moment you've all been waiting for, people. It's the show of this show. It is Love Rat on Channel 5, an Emmy-nominated prestige drama that tackles the serious issue of holiday love rats, and one that I can only assume has been visited upon me as some kind of divine punishment. Kay, as our resident love rat, and someone who I believe was extolling the virtues of this on last week's show.
James, take it back. Listeners, I actually said, I urged them behind the scenes, let's not do Love Rap, because I just know it's going to get a stinging review.
And would that be unfair?
No, but I had watched it. I'd reviewed it for the magazine. Yeah. I knew what it was all about.
What did you give it?
I gave it 3 stars.
That was generous.
I know, but listen, I knew what was coming anyway, just like from Boyd and I probably, and then add James into the mix, and I thought this could be catastrophic. Yeah, they both ignored me, as is their wont.
Yeah, Boyd, he went to bat for the love rat.
Yeah.
Look, so come on, let's be fair. The choices were limited this week.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they were limited, and some of the things we considered were not available.
Exactly.
So, yes.
Exactly. So don't, you know.
Okay. Before I go into this, I would say that Channel 5 have produced some really great dramas in recent times, but Love Rat, along with Finders Keepers, is not one of those dramas. Okay. So, Sally Lindsay is in there. She plays Emma, who is a divorcee, and she goes on holiday. She leaves behind her daughter and her ex-husband, Neil Morrissey, and she goes on holiday, brandishing a copy of Wuthering Heights. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because this visual clue, this book, it takes up a lot of I'd say a third of the of the show, because you see it so often. She's carrying it around. She's gazing at it. When she gets to the hotel bar, the manager, it turns out to be the manager, Nico, played by Gerald Kidd, is also, you know, he's also reading that book. Just by some coincidence, he is reading that book as well. They strike up a conversation after a bit of gazing at each other in this kind of awkward, like would never happen in reality way. They just like, you know, have this awkward gazing session, and then they bond over this book and the fact that neither of them can get past the first 10 pages. So far, like a drama about a book club, as I've said before, because you're thinking, is this about Wuthering Heights? No, this is about their blossoming romance, a whirlwind summer romance that occurs in Cyprus. And as the title suggests, Nico is a grade A love rat. So he love bombs her so comprehensively that she is rendered senseless to the flag. How did that person describe the red flags in Lena Dunham's thing? Basically, endless red flags that he is not a good guy. He is like saying all the things that he wants her to believe, which obviously... so obviously aren't true, but you know, she's not in a great place and she wants to believe love is alive and he's kind of handsome, and so she goes along with it and he fleeces her for all her money. Now, it is not believable. It's not particularly well acted. I mean, I love Silly Lansley.
Silly Lansley.
I thought we'd banned the S word on this podcast.
Yeah.
Sally Lindsay. But this is like, you know, these actors aren't being served by a believable story or a decent script. And I didn't connect with any of the characters. It doesn't feel real. And it was not good.
I spare a thought for Neil Morrissey, I would say, in this, who has one of the more thankless roles in this. But it just made me think of that other, I'm pretty sure it was Channel 5 show. You know, the one where he nicks the lottery ticket and then fucks off to like Spain? This reminded me quite a lot.
No, that was actually BBC One, The Syndicate.
Was it BBC One? The Syndicate. Syndicate. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. This is, I mean, Boydie, tell us what you thought of Love Rats.
I didn't hate it as much as you.
Is not good. Channel 5 have done loads of good things.
Let me finish.
Sorry, I'm doing a James. Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, normally you're very...
Yeah, sorry.
Very...
You're so snooty-magooty, guy.
First of all, I think this is a story. I think the reason why Channel 5 commissioned this, because this is a story that actually does happen an incredible amount. Like if you're like me and you watch This Morning, which I do religiously when I'm not in the office, they have examples of this, these con art, people who've been victims of con artists.
It happens occasionally, but is it really like prolific?
Like this, yeah. The two things that this is addressing is people getting seduced in foreign countries by people who are literally professional con merchants, and the planting them in a home owned by other people, using as if they're the latter. So there's
in
loads
which case
of cases.
It is believable, then.
So they had a feature, on This Morning, of people, homeowners who've come back to find people occupying their home, thinking they'd bought it legitimately when they've been conned out of it, and it had just been hired by these criminal masterminds to use a slightly misdirected word, pretending they're just hiring it for Airbnb. So everything that happens in this episode, and I sat there thinking, what they've done here is they're dramatizing these things that do happen a lot. And the thing that the female, often mostly victims of these things, say when there is, they feel so ashamed and embarrassed that they fell for these things, that but you do get seduced. So I'm coming at it from that angle, and I actually thought I found it quite depressing to watch, because I knew that these things actually do happen to people. And I think Sally Lindsay's really good. So here's my main point.
Yes, I said that.
But I think she's always good. But I really felt for her, I have to say, in the show. So I was emotionally invested in her, because like, she's great. She's, you know, and she's, they establish early on, you know, she's divorcing Uriah, thankless task.
Neil Morrissey.
Yeah. She's got her daughter, got a baby, and is, you know, caught up with that. And I totally fell for her. And I have to be honest.
I did as well.
I know, you're all right. So on where I agree with you is it's the script isn't great, and And you know, it's quite basic, I think. It's quite kind of, you know what's going to happen, right? The clue's in the title, and it unfolds in this kind of like, oh, we know what's going to happen. You know, so that's the problem with it. I think it needed to, it needed a bit something else extra in it.
There's no twists, there's right? No,
well, so far, I mean, I only watched four episodes, I think. Yeah. So, and I'm sure you're right, and I think it's just mainly a dramatization of, you know, how can she get her money back? Can she get her life back? And I have to say those scenes.
And she played them very well.
I said
Sally Lindsay was great. And to be honest, it wasn't the extraordinary scenes of like the homeowners coming back, because I sort of could see that. Mm. It's more that maybe it was a frustration in me that I was like, how can she just believe everything this guy's saying and hand over the money within a day or two?
Right. But I guess because I think it is different because I've seen real people talking about these experiences that it does happen a lot. Incredible amount, and that's they're feeding on these professional con artists, feeding on gullible, to use a judgmental. I'm trying not to use a judgmental word, but in particular context, they do end up being gullible and falling for it. So it does happen. So that's where I'm coming from, and I felt really bad for her. I felt really sorry for her, and she's great. And I didn't think it was so terrible that it overrode me caring about her. I'll tell you this. This is weird, but I care more about Sally Lindsay in this than I did Abraham Lincoln in Manhunt, and I did not expect. That to happen.
Channel 5, there's your quote. Yeah. Two things I've learned from that. Yeah. Boyd cares more about Sally than Abe, and I should watch this morning more.
Yeah, definitely.
Clearly.
Yeah.
I think they want it to be true, isn't it? It's like it's self-deception more than anything else. They so desperately want it to be true that they're willing to kind of put all sense aside and go into it. You're right, this does happen quite a lot, and it is tragic and it's very upsetting. And actually, you know, you're really upset and also like really angry at the end that this has actually happened. But none of that changes the fact that this is dreadful.
So my feeling is it can't be that dreadful if I was really invested in her. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it's that terrible. I don't think it's as bad. What's the other one you mentioned that we reviewed?
Finders Keepers.
I don't think it's anywhere near as bad as Finders Keepers. I thought Finders Keepers was absolutely terrible. I think this is better than that. I think because that was like that had moments that were comical. This isn't comical. Apart from the Wuthering Heights thing, which I agree is weird. It didn't make me think, oh, this is just... I didn't feel like that way about this.
No, it's not comical.
Yeah.
And I am more emotionally invested.
So it's not comically bad. I thought it was just like flawed.
No, it's deeply, just regular bad. Not regular comically bad, just regular
deeply,
bad.
Deeply flawed. And I tell you what, I bet this does really well in the ratings. It'll be a big hit.
Do you think?
Yeah,
That depressingly, that wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, I think so. Because she's really popular. People really like her. And I think the story, it's topical. Because it's happening more and more. It's shocking how it's happening more and more.
But this is an interesting discussion though, isn't it? Because first of all, I think there's an audience for this kind of stuff just generally. Because it's not the most demanding television you'll ever see. But also, it taps into that thing. No, it isn't. It's not that demanding.
It's pretty basic
storytelling. Hey, you've already called them out on Wuthering Heights. but also, like the fact that for the same reason that people watch these kind of like true crime documentaries, there's that sense of, you know, this is a thing that happens. And they get that sort of like, that's the stress and the thrill of seeing it sort of play out. So I think it taps into people who probably watch a lot of that true crime stuff as well.
I think it's a warning as well, because I think the other thing I was going to say, I think he's actually pretty good as well as this really, you know, seductive figure. Mm. I think he's pretty good. So, like, and I think you watch it and you think, right, you know, things to avoid are things to, you know, red alerts, don't move in
with random hunky strangers when you go on holiday. I'd say that's a reasonable thing to live
after
by.
After a couple of days, don't give him all your savings.
No, I know, but...
But the thing is, this happens.
The manipulations are like, they have an absolute series of manipulations that they do.
Starting with reading Wuthering Heights.
Starting with reading the same book that came out in, wherever. I'm defending it.
Are you going to watch all four episodes?
I genuinely want to know how...
So is that a commitment?
If she gets revenge and if she sorts her life out, and what happens, and whether, I'm assuming Neil Morris is going to come
in
and help.
It's like dealing with a politician. Answer the question, boy.
By next week's podcast, will you have watched every episode of Love Rats?
Yes or no?
Yes.
You are right, there we go. Yeah. Listeners, we have a commitment here. This is set in stone. Yeah. Boyd has promised by next week's podcast, he will have watched all four episodes of Love Rat, and he will give a full and total account of it on next week's show.
And I will watch more if you say that, you know.
Oh, on your another I promise.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to, you know, I'm happy to watch it myself.
I am also prepared.
I haven't slated it.
I'm also prepared to make a promise. No matter what you say, I will under no circumstances watch another minute of the show.
You surprise me.
Yeah, entirely predictable.
Love Rat then, which is on Channel 5.
Stripped across the week from today, Monday the 11th of March, 2024, to Thursday the 14th of March, 2024,
what a treat.
At 9 p.m.
If anyone listening is going to watch it, get in touch to let us know if we have been too harsh, James and I. I would be interested.
I'm sure most of our listeners will agree with you. It's not. I'm not, you know, it's fine. We can, you know.
I'll roll and rat over there, defending it.
Roland Rat? What's that about?
Oh. Right, Rat fans, we're done with this week's podcast. But before we do...
That's one voice you could have done and you didn't do it.
Oh, what,
yeah.
Roland?
Yeah,
Rat fans!
Oh, my God, that was horrific.
That's all I can do.
The visual was
I can't
more
do Kevin. Do you remember Errol the hamster? He's Jesus. From Wales.
Jesus.
Yeah, no? Roland.
What have I started?
What have you started? Horrific.
Oh, Lord.
Anyway,
yes.
Also out this also week, Boyd.
So there's this thing called The Cleaning Lady.
Yes, which we couldn't get screeners
for. Which we couldn't get screeners of, which is on Sky Witness on Monday, Monday today.
Young Royals. Series 3.
That's about the relationship between a prince and a kind of commoner dude at school in somewhere like Denmark.
We're all about the specificity here.
Sorry.
That's un amore.
Indeed.
But that's weirdly arriving, but that's quite a big deal. I think it's got a big fan base, this show, because they're showing, it's on Netflix today, Monday, because I think it airs in its original country today
what,
as well.
Un amore?
No, Young Royals.
Young Royals.
Oh, right.
I'm gone on to un amore. Yeah. So I think that's quite a big deal. That they're very rare that Netflix debuts something like that, a scripted show on a Monday. There's also Girls Five Ever, is that how we pronounce
that's
it?
That's right, yeah.
Because it was Girls Four Ever,
yeah,
wasn't it?
There's five of them now.
There's five of them now. And let's move to Netflix. It was on Lionsgate,
I think, maybe.
Or Amazon Prime, something like that. It's now on Netflix. Invincible Series 2.
Series 2, Part B.
Yeah.
Unamore, yes.
Which is this Sky Atlantic Italian romantic drama, I think. That is on Thursday. Whistable Pearl, which was on Acorn, you know, the streaming service Acorn. Lots of you use Acorn Antiques. That's on Drama, UK TV channel. James is looking at me like a mad. It's got a pretty evil expression on his face. Yes, I think that's, maybe is that about it?
That feels like it's about it.
Yeah.
What is our pick of the week?
The Dry.
It is the Dry, isn't it? It really is the Dry.
I think we're unanimous.
Oh, I thought you could say Love Rat.
Yeah, I thought you'd defend Love Rat. Well, Boydie, you're going to...
The Dry is a genuinely great show.
But since we all know you won't be watching The Dry this week, you're going to instead be watching every episode of Love Rat.
God.
I'm so happy about
that. I've got more episodes of, like... The body problem.
Free body problem, yes.
I've got like The Regime with Kate Winslet, but now I have to watch this instead.
Above all else.
Yeah. Love Rat first and foremost. Okay, well, that is it for this week's episode of the Pilot TV Podcast. If you've enjoyed us, please do head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a 5 Love Rat rating.
Yes, please do. Make this all worthwhile.
Oh, God. Please follow us on social media at Pilot TV Pod, at Boyd Hilton, at Kay Ribeiro, and of course, at James C. Dyer. We will see you, those of you who subscribe to Pilot Plus, and thank you very much for doing so because it's what allows us to do this regular podcast. We will be reviewing something on Thursday. I would love to tell you what it is, but we haven't decided yet, or even frankly had a discussion about it. But there will be something, and we will also be doing other things on that show. Again, TBC
you're
at this stage.
You're making it sound really good for
I'm
people
selling
who are thinking
it.
About
I'm selling it. I'm selling it. But what I'm saying is it's so exclusive. It's such a secret. It's such a treat that even we do not know what is in store for us on the next Pilot Plus. Even we don't know.
No one's buying that.
It's so exciting. So to hear us talk about Love Rats episodes 2, 3, and 4, do tune in to Pilot Plus on Thursday.
God, I can't believe you're encouraging.
Oh, God. And we'll be back next week to talk about many things, including, I think, 3 Body Problem, but I don't know in what form. So we'll be doing that on the regular show, on Plus. I don't know. Wait and see. Exciting times. Right. That's it. That's it for this week's show. Until next week, Love Rats out.